Good day, everyone. Aja waja yagul, naya pulling clay. So I'm a yagul woman from the north coast of New South Wales, pulling clay, and I'm the director of the Kalino Heart.
I've seen the documentary film. It's absolutely magnificent. Pauline, well done. Where do we start, sis? Do we start with the
Know.
fact that you've got a personal connection to this story? Did you want to explain that for us first up, hey?
When I was seven, I was in Lismore Hospital for a year, and my mum told me the connection of a family storyline that just sort of kind of captivated me in, because I only saw my parents once a week. They drove up and visited me once a week, and I would constantly ask her about this family, the Sullivans, who then became the Kalinos. And they just intrigued me. At the same time, my dad gave me a book called The Hobbit, which I then started reading and created this magical world in my head of the Kalinos living in this Middle Earth, and Mordor was the British Empire and Australia policies. And I just wanted to tell this story in some shape or form. I always thought I'd be the producer. I started collating newspaper articles when I was 12, and then, started digitizing and creating a database when I was in my early 20s again. And then about 15 years ago, I tried to, get the story up and running, and I couldn't. And I think it was partly because there were options held elsewhere in Australia at the time to some of the footage. And I just knew it needed, something or someone else. And then I heard that Rhona Roberts was developing a story, either in theatre and in film. And so I just thought, oh, well, at least Rhodes has got it, And then I got a call from Wildbear asking, would I be interested in telling the story? And I said, I would, as long as family were a part of it. Because for me, even though there is a book and it is about Con and his amazing work, the whole family as a whole were impressive. And I wanted to make sure that when you tell stories that are our stories to tell, it's not just about the one that shines through, it's about the collective, And so I wanted to make sure that I found the fam, I knew that somewhere in the world the family line would have had someone that was being told stories like I was orally, because if they had that Indigenous way of telling, there had to be someone in the family that was holding some of those stories. And I was lucky that, 4 years ago we found Molly.
And Molly, you just mentioned there, is featured throughout the film. What was it like when you first met Molly?
I just felt like I had a kindred spirit. Like, it was weird. Like, she had been given all these stories from her mum, who was one of the Kalino sisters. And on top of it, she'd spent time in Florida with her Auntie Joyce and Auntie Winnie and Uncle Con, and and I don't know, like, even though she hadn't been brought up, she was very American in so many ways, but very Indigenous in so many other ways. Even though in their mind they hadn't been brought up that way, the family had made sure that there were traits in their lives that held them in that very communal way of sharing and caring,
And that really shines through in the documentary. And when I was watching it, you with Molly there in her house over in the United States of America, you looked right at home, sis. Hey, true God.
Yeah, and I think, and at the same time, finding Deb here in Australia and finding her, I think in one way, sis, it's that We've got to start having these conversations about how do we talk about those other generations that we don't. We talk heavily in this country about the stolen generation. We don't really talk about the hidden generation. We don't talk about the new generation that are DNAing and finding their connections. And how do we talk about how do they come home and hear the stories that need to be told about our mob and also about their own family? And how do we connect them again to those ways of teaching and linking with each other? And I think that was something that I was, hopefully really proud that we've done with this film, is not just tell an amazingly epic story about a family who become some of the biggest names in the world in the circus fraternity, but also how do we talk about identity in this country in a way that heals us as well and starts to not point fingers but understand all of the layers and complexities that were happening in that 1900s period to make our people want to see a better future for their children and hide.
Let's talk about the film and what it's all about, sis. Can you give us a rundown, a synopsis of what people can be watching?
So it's a story about an Aboriginal family who, instead of becoming involved in the sort of policies of the Aboriginal Protection Act in the 1900s, evade it by becoming a circus act and then escaping Australia on the crunch of the Stolen Generation era, because Julia never wanted to separate her 10 children. And so they escaped overseas and became a part of the greatest show on earth, the Barnum Ringling Circus, and then led exceptional lives that their children and next generation are now reconnecting back with Australia now that they know who they are, because they hid their identity for generations because of the issues of what was happening in the racist Australia in that period of time.
And what you described there when they did leave Australia, 10 children, mum and dad, they went to London and then found themselves over in the United States in Brooklyn, Pauline.
Yeah, and sort of kind of, in a playground of the, 1920s, the roaring 20s, when, in the heyday of, Harlem and Broadway and sort of living large in a way with immense skills in entertainment by that point, and the world was their oyster, and they performed with some of the best and were some of the best.
How would you describe one of the fellas featured, one of the main characters, Con Sullivan or Con Colino? Tell us about what that fella was like, hey?
They were all a little bit of a, the black fella in them. They were jokesters, they were tricksters. But he was the wizard on the wire. He was a center ring act for years in the circus. Is a Hall of Famer. One of him and his little sister Winnie, or older sister, I should say. But she's called Little Winnie because his wife was also known as Winnie, is also Winnie. Very confusing in their family. They've got a lot of names that are the same. But he was the first tight wire act to do the forward somersault on the wire, and the only one for probably about 30 years. The forward somersault on the tight wire is one of the hardest tricks to do because you can't see the wire as you land. So it's an instinctive thing that he did. And yeah, and not a lot of people could do that act for a long period of time. Still to this day, there's There's only a few that have done it, and he did it nearly every day for, 40 years of his life.
And also throughout the documentary, there's a real sense that family really had to hide their Aboriginal identity from the world as performers, and they'd perform under other identities, cultural identities from around the world.
In the end, sort of kind of created the persona around the Spanish sort of kind of act in a way. And I suppose in a way that circus period, there was still the exotic, the native savage sort of kind of show and tell part. And so wanting to be above that. I mean, they were the highest paid. He, especially Con, he was one of the highest paid circus acts in the world. And so, at the same time, there were still those exotic sideshows going on, for, Aboriginal savages and the, so he wanted to be above that and to perform to his highest ability. And so, yeah, they sadly hid their identity for a long period of time, and the next generation didn't know that they were what their connection was. They knew that they were connected to Australia, and that was about it. So when they started to learn the history, they were amazed. And so at the age of, in her 80s, Molly coming back to Australia to finally learn what that connection meant, and going on the journey with this film to understand some of that history has been a remarkable, not just for her, but for the rest of the family to learn some of that story as we were going along and filming with them, and being a part of helping them to see what that story is and how, it can sometimes be damaging but also healing to hear some of the things that their family had to go through to get to where they were are today.
One thing that really impressed me in the documentary was the use of the archival footage, the still photos, and the moving images. And I understand this was available because Con, back in the day, in the early 1900s, owned a camera sis. Wow.
Yeah, so could almost call him now our first documentarian in a way. Because in the early 1920s, when they left Australia, he brought a camera and started documenting their family, and the life that they led around the world. I mean, they were a part of. And the joy of seeing, we're so used to seeing footage in Australia of that period of the 1900s to the 1930s that is slightly propaganda-ish, of Aboriginal Australia, sort of people in mission status and being marched into spaces. And, and then you see this archival footage that the family had had. And it's them having joy, and it's stuff that we're so not used to in terms of our own archives here in Australia. And so being able to show joy in that period, and just our fam like family swimming and families dancing, and was really special to sort of see. They look like us, they sound like us, but they're doing all this stuff in different parts of the world and living in a way that, is not oppressive, and in a way showing, being able to show that our community has such resilience in joy and life and love at the same time as, some hard truths that are happening around us,
True, sis. And like you said, back in the early 1900s, it wasn't us mob holding the cameras. It was non-Indigenous folk. Yeah. So for me, what I was so fascinated, impressed by, that Con Colano, Con Sullivan owned his own camera. And for me,
Yeah.
it was a real joy to be able to witness an Aboriginal person from that time taking photographs. I've never seen that before, sis, in my life.
It's one of the reasons why, for me, I've always wanted to tell this story. I knew that footage was there. And so, it's like, for me, I'm like, one of these days, that's the footage. It's the ungettable get for me. As I said, I always thought I would produce it, but being able to direct a story like this, I'm sort of kind of glad that I was obsessively looking for archives all the time. I knew that this family was taking photos and creating footage of eras that we have never seen in that light of Aboriginal people doing that sort of kind of and dressing that way and moving that way. What was fun to do with this documentary was, because all the films were silent, was to do some foley and give sound back to that and make them alive again and hear laughter in that was really special. You know, it made, I remember Molly and the family seeing it for the first time, them all crying because they, you know, like their family were alive again in front of them, you know, and it was, yeah, one of my proudest moments of showing them the film when they realized that there was sound now attached to their mum's dancing or the, you know, their auntie's dancing.
And you just mentioned there about the fashion this amazing family wore. That was ever so impressive throughout the documentary. I thought their fashion was just next level. So beautiful, the way they would dress.
And to think of it, little Winnie, one of the performers, she was making all of their dresses and stuff. So they obviously were a cut of, you know, we say, I think we've had this conversation in the past, but for a mob to survive this country for, you know, in time immemorial, you know, 100,000 years or whatever, we'd have to be quite exceptional. So, like, when you give, you know, when you give them
True.
the opportunity to be the best of the best, you know, we rise to the challenge, you know? And I think that was one thing that I loved, you know, like they were rising to the challenge of, you know, living in a period when they were creating the look, their look. They were a part of creating, you know, circus acts that had never been seen before. You know, they were wowing the audience while they were making sure that they were loving and supporting each other around the world. You know, it's quite an exceptional family that it's amazing that we don't, you know, we know this ourselves. You know, the Pastor Dougs of the world, the, you know, there is. Oh, David Unipens, there is so many of our stories of exceptional mob that still haven't been told. And I was lucky that I had at least the footage and the photos to be able to help to tell this story. Because that's often the reason why we don't tell these stories, is because we don't have that archives to be able to tell it the way that we need to tell it, you know?
Yeah, true. Hey, sis. Do you have any highlights in working on this documentary for so many years, sis?
Oh, too many. I mean, I don't know if it's a highlight, but it was funny driving around. You know, I don't know if it was funny, but we were shooting around the time when a week before the elections for Trump last year. It was weird to be in that space at that time. I loved having Halloween in America with the family. I thought it was so weird and wonderful and such an American thing to do for an Australian family in so many ways, because like when you hang with them that much, you start to see how similar they are to you. So you don't, you know, as I said, you in the film, you know, you hear their American accent, but the way that they look after each other and laugh with each other is such a blackfella way of communicating that you sort of kind of had to keep catching yourself and going, oh, that's right. You know, they still have that Americanism in them. But yeah, I think my our you know, I'm so proud that being able to take Deb and Molly back on the country and to do a proper cleansing with the women in Narrabri was just, so special. And there's so many, there's just so many things. I wish we would have had more time. But as I said to everyone else and the family included, that this is just the start of the story, and it's up to them to now tell more, we're the little pebble that got put in the pond and has started the ripple, and it's now up to them to tell more of the stories, because they're an amazing family that need to, like many of our families, we still need to tell these stories that and unearth them as much as we can.
And just my final question to you today, Sis Pauline. What did your family, the mob here, think of this story as it folded and the more you discovered and researched and more of the story came out? Were they quite fascinated? Were they shocked? Were they not shocked? How were they feeling?
Mum knew a lot of the story, so like that's why for me, I was so glad that before she passed, I was able to say that we were going ahead with it.
Oh.
She was glad that we were finally telling this story. I think people in so many ways here in Australia were like, we would know about them if they were that famous.
Yeah, true,
And
eh? That is exactly how I felt, sis. Yeah.
that's the bit that
Truth.
just I kept coming up against. Like people were like, really? I don't know whether or not are you talking porkies? Like it was,
Yeah.
they were, it was that they were almost like the Forrest Gump. They, in so many ways, in a significant part of history from the 1920s to the 1950s, that family were a part of some of those moments, and we couldn't put all of the moments in, they, one of them, had made Princess Margaret laugh so much, and Princess Elizabeth was back when they were princesses, when Princess Elizabeth wasn't a queen yet. But it made them laugh so much that they fell off their chairs at the Royal Gala when they performed. We couldn't put that story in because we were like, God,
Hey, look
but we
out.
just, it's that thing of like they were Forrest Gumping in the middle of these big moments of history, and they were blackfellas, and we were like, how do we not know? Like, I just don't understand why we don't know these stories. Why don't we know about our legends here in Australia? That, and part of it is because we have, we just have a silence when it comes to supporting the good things about Aboriginal Australia, as well as, we're so used to hearing just the negative stories. And I think it's time for us to tell more than just the negative, and to show that resilience and that love for family that we have,
Thanks so much for joining us on NITV Radio today, Pauline Clegg. It's been an absolute pleasure. Well done to you and the team. Look forward to seeing how this documentary will travel around the world, which I have no doubt it will, sis. Well done.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, sis.